Hi, my name is Tony Pelias, and this is my first contribution to Hacker Public Radio. Today, I want to talk to you about Octopress and advocate the use of static site generators to help you create websites and build the HTML necessary to do anything from build your blog to create a product catalog or portfolio website. I, for a long time, have run a small blog called ilearnthings.com, where I post a, where I have posted a series of tutorial screencasts with the hopes of teaching people valuable business skills, specifically how to use free and open source software such as LibreOffice, OpenOffice, those type of things. Because in my work, I have found that a lot of people really lack some of these very basic word processing and Office software type skills. And the beauty is that there are a number of free programs out there and free educational material which you as a prospective employee can learn in order to empower yourself, be able to get a good or higher paying job, and improve your situation in life. So it's something I've been very passionate about in providing this free education. And I had built my web blog on one of the most common platforms, which is WordPress. And for a long time, I was very satisfied with the results. But I don't know, maybe a year ago or so, I received a notice from Google saying that my site had been delisted for possible malicious activity. And this kind of sent me into a panic because I don't have the resources or anything to continually monitor my website to make sure everything's running fine. And I was panicking because I thought someone had hacked it, maybe taken over my website and done who knows what. So I began the process of investigation. I took the site offline. I compared the actual code that was on the site with backups that I had through a series of divs to try to figure out what had changed and what had caused Google to delist my site and mark it as malicious. In the end, I couldn't really ever figure out what the issue was. The closest explanation I had was that there was a link or an image link which I had posted from the SoCal Linux Expo advertising my attendance at Scale, and that image had been taken down from their website, so it was pointing to a blank image, and I think that might have been what cause Google to delist my site or mark it as malicious. But I had no confirmation of that. And there's really, when you're investigating these things, there's no sure way, or I find that it can be incredibly difficult to determine exactly what the issue may be because there's just so many variables. In the end, I was able to get Google to list my site again. It seemed that I have resolved all the issues. But really, I was kind of disappointed in WordPress itself because I know WordPress is vulnerable to a lot of issues. You have to continuously ensure that you maintain this website up to, or the, not the website, but the content management system, WordPress itself as a system, you have to constantly update it because it is a big target to be exploited. Now, the web has benefited greatly from dynamic languages such as PHP, Perl, Ruby, and Python to create websites that are rich and engaging and allow us to have conversations online. When the web first came out, it was, I remember back to those days, it was very much a one-way conversation. It was a way for us to just post information online and kind of didactic and expel what was on our mind and have other people read it. But it was very uncommon for these other people, these millions of people online, to actually interact with our with these web pages. And that's really what the big revolution of what's called Web 2.0 brought, is this sort of interactivity, this emphasis on conversation and interaction and where our users are invested in the content itself that is created on these websites. And these sorts of websites would not have been possible without these dynamic languages. But at the same time, these languages brought in a lot of security issues that you now have to worry about if you're building a website in PHP or Ruby or Perl or any of those other languages, because it allows potentially malicious people to potentially alter the contents of your website to make your website do things that you don't want them to do. So one way to eliminate many of these risks is to make your website static. In other words, make it so nothing can change on the website. And though you're still vulnerable to exploits in the security of the underlying operating system or the security of your web server itself that's serving up these pages, you do eliminate a lot of the potential avenues of attack by providing only static HTML pages. Now, of course, you're saying, well, aren't we just returning to a time where we're just posting information online and we're not allowing our users or our viewers, our web page viewers, to interact with the content that we have listed on the website? And yeah, I mean, to a large extent, yes, you know, we are, but we're doing that on purpose. And for a great number of websites, it's really all that is needed. You know, blogs, the purpose of a blog is many times for us to express ourselves, ideas, document what we've been through, document things that we have learned. And that takes primacy over the actual interaction with our viewers. And that's not to say that interactions is completely eliminated if we resort to static websites, because most modern web browsers do allow JavaScript, and you can simulate a degree of interactivity using JavaScript as a tool. So when I made the decision to change my WordPress blog to a static website, my biggest concern was this: would my users be able to interact? Did they feel vested in the actual website and the content that I was providing? And, you know, normally this is done through allowing users or viewers to enter comments and interact with you in that format. But I found that there was a service, a software as a service called Discuss, which you could embed into your website, which would allow you to provide comments even though your website itself was static and unchanging. And it did that by allowing you to embed a piece of JavaScript which would communicate to a third-party server, and of course these comments would then be stored in this third-party server. So the disadvantage was that I didn't manage these comments and they weren't really mine, they were on this third-party server. But the advantage was that it's one less thing that I had to worry about in terms of managing my site. So then I set out, once I figured out, okay, well, this problem is solved, I don't have to worry about not being able to provide comments or some form of interaction with my users, I set about trying to find what would be the best way to generate a static HTML website. And there are a number of static HTML site generators out there. Pretty much any programming language you can think of has one. And probably the most common, the most popular one is one called Jekyll, which was pioneered by GitHub. GitHub, of course, is an online community centered around Git and project and development. They offer open source projects the ability to host their code for free. And they use Jekyll to create their what they call GitHub pages, which are basically project pages or websites that are hosted on GitHub that can be specific to a single user or a project itself. I looked at that, and Jekyll is great, but it's very bare bones. It basically, all it does is give you a series of scripts that help you automate it, but you're still building a website essentially from scratch. And though there's a lot of power in Jekyll, there is a little bit of a time commitment necessary in order to get it up and running and designed the way that you want. The second project that I looked at was Jekyll Bootstrap, which basically took Jekyll and added some scripts to configure some of the very basic stuff that you would need out of the box, such as themes and basic deploying scripts and those kind of things. But Jekyll Bootstrap fell out of favor, or didn't fall out of favor, but it was the originator of that project moved on to other projects, and so it's kind of fallen by the wayside and replaced by other more currently maintained projects. I also took a look at Pelican, which was a Python version essentially of Jekyll, and I like that one a lot because Python comes by default in a lot of Linux operating systems, and I use Linux as my own operating system, so I didn't have to really install too many other dependencies. But still, I found better options. And then There was a HPR episode number 1203 on Templar, which is Perl based. Another good example of a static site generator. But again, I'm not an expert on Perl. I do know Ruby quite well, and I know a little bit of Python, so I felt a lot more comfortable in those languages. And the nice thing about a static site generator, if you know these languages, you can really customize it to your needs. So you can really take it and run with it. And the idea of these static site generators is that you write code to basically create these sites for you. And really simplify the process of, in my case, of creating my blog, creating new blog posts, updating the RSS feed, embedding the videos, the pictures, and so on and so forth. So finally, the one I settled on was a tool called Octopress, and it's available at octopress.org. And the reason I settled on this particular one is that, one, it's based on Jekyll, which is again, one of the most popular static site generators. But on top of that, it adds a number of really useful tools that I really enjoyed. It was based in Ruby, and Ruby's a language that I'm very comfortable in. And if you're not familiar with Ruby or never programmed in Ruby, it's something I highly recommend getting into. It's a very expressive programming language. It's available pretty much in any operating system. And it's very easy to read. And, you know, the adage basically goes that Ruby was designed for programmer happiness. So if you're a programmer and you like, or even if you're not a programmer, if you do any programming and you like to be happy, why not give Ruby a try? Now, it's kind of cliche to say that, but in truth, that has been my experience. I'm not really a professional programmer, but I do enjoy programming and solving problems using programming tools such as the Ruby language. So Ruby, as the programming language for Octopress, and really allows for very expressive scripts and very easy to modify templating system. Octopress also uses SAS, which stands for Syntactically Awesome Style Sheets, which is essentially, I guess it's a preprocessor for CSS. In other words, it lets you write code that looks very similar to CSS code, but gives you a few additional options which are not available in CSS, including the use of variables. So if you have, for example, colors that you want to define for your particular website, you can define variables for these colors. And if you ever down the line need to change the colors, instead of changing every instance where a particular color appears in your CSS file, you just change the instance where you declare the variable. And what SAS does is compile these files into regular CSS. So this SAS, if you've never used it to build websites, is really a tremendous tool. Octopress comes with SAS. It uses it by default. If it's not something you've used it for, it might take a little getting used to actually harness the power of SAS. But the nice thing about SAS is if you don't know SAS or you don't know the SAS syntax, you can just write CSS, and it will still work. There's nothing more that you have to learn in order to use it, but if you do spend the time to learn SAS, you will be rewarded. It also uses Twitter Bootstrap as the basic template of the system, and Twitter Bootstrap is a HTML5 template, essentially, used quite commonly in modern websites, and what it offers is a very modern, very beautiful, very simple design. That is scalable across a wide variety of different screen resolutions. And the reason that's important is because as devices, we kind of have huge variety of different resolutions. We have cell phones and we have monitors. We have retina displays or high resolution monitors. So you never know what the devices are that they're going to be viewing your website on. And what Twitter Bootstrap, one of the things I really like about it, in addition to that, it looks very appealing, is that it really works well across a multitude of different screen sizes. So I can look at my website on my mobile phone, or I can look at it on my desktop, and I will still have a good experience browsing my website. Octopress also came with an HTML5 video plugin, which meant it was very easy to integrate HTML5 video I ended up customizing this part for my particular needs, but because my blog was a screencasting blog where I posted videos, this is one thing that was very important to me. I ended up changing it. By default, the Octopress video plugin uses just MP4 x264 files basically, and if your browser is not compatible in playing these, it'll display a flash video. And I wanted a few more options, so I ended up changing the code for mine and to also enable AUG videos and WebM videos in the HTML5 format. So if you visit the site, depending on the browser that you have, it'll go through and try to find one version of the video that'll play correctly in your web browser, so that I didn't have to rely on Flash or YouTube or anything like that to have my videos displayed. And then finally, one of the big selling points for me in using Octopress was the deployment scripts that it comes with. It's so incredibly easy to write your blog post, and it's just a two-letter command in the terminal to deploy it and make it live. All right, so now that you have an idea of really the beauty of a static site generator, I'm going to give you some of the requirements. I'm not going to list all the or read the code out loud because it can get very boring, but I will have a list of commands in the show notes that you can then follow to get your blog or website published using Octopress. In order to set up your environment, you're going to have a few tools installed on your computer. Octopress depends on Git, and Git is the version control system used quite extensively in the open source community because of its flexibility. And the nice thing about using Git to distribute Octopress is that really it's compatible in almost any environment. So all you're doing when you're installing Octopress on your computer is really cloning the repository of Octopress, and it creates a folder that you can then use to change the files to publish your own website. It also requires Ruby, like I said before. Now, I know in the open source Linux community, Ruby is not quite as common as some other similar programming language such as Python, but if you've never given Ruby a try, I would highly recommend it. To learn the very basics, it shouldn't take too long. I will try to include some resources in the show notes that you can use to get your feet wet with Ruby. But even if you don't feel like spending the time learning Ruby, you can still use Octopress, because really what you're using when you're using Octopress is just its text editor and a few commands on the command line. So you need Ruby installed. Now, installing Ruby can have its own problems, particularly because Octopress requires Ruby 1.9.3, and a lot of systems, including the Ubuntu LTS 12.04, I don't believe come with a version that's 1.9.3 or later. So in order to get around these issues, there are a number of tools in the Ruby community that were developed that allow you to install localized versions of Ruby and quickly switch between the system one and the local one, or have several versions of in a local system, so you can have different projects, each with which a different version of Ruby. And the one that I recommend is RBEnv, one RBEnv. Also there's another one that's quite popular called RBM. And you can use these tools to download any version of Ruby that you want, locally compile it on your computer, and it essentially saves it on your home folder so that you can then use that version instead of the system installed one. Now, Ruby is a requirement only on your local computer. You don't have to worry about having Ruby installed on your web server or wherever you're going to deploy this website eventually, because it is just a static HTML website. All you really need is a web server. But in order to generate these static HTML pages, you do need Ruby installed on your local computer or whatever computer you're going to use to create your blog posts and use Octopress. So once you have Ruby installed and you have Git installed, you'll also need a text editor. Now, there's a million text editors out there. The two big ones, of course, being Vim and Emacs. And really, it doesn't matter which one or which text editor you use, as long as it can edit plain text files. So pretty much anything can do that. I personally use Emacs because I've grown to love it, and I have my whole configuration set up. But really, it doesn't matter. All you need is a basic text editor. You don't need to learn a Dreamweaver or FrontPage or any of those silly tools. And that's one thing that I really like about Octopress, is that if you have any knowledge on HTML, you can still use it. You don't really have to learn a whole new system other than a few commands on the command line. Everything that you know about HTML still applies. If you know a little bit of Ruby, you can really take full advantage of Octopress by creating your own scripts, by customizing what's available. But really, with a little basic HTML knowledge and a knowledge of few commands on the command line, that's all you really need to get started. So the commands on the command line are very simple. The ones that you're going to need to create a new blog post are one called rake new underscore post. That'll create the blog post for you. And the blog posts are just basically text files, and you would type in the markdown format. So you don't even have to type HTML into your blog posts. You would just type plain text as you would do any document, and it will integrate that when the site gets generated into the HTML. So in order to generate this HTML, you would type into the command line rake generate, and it would take all the source files and generate the static HTML for you. Then you can just take these static HTML pages and upload them into your server. But to make that even easier, Octopress comes with a command called rake deploy, which will take your default configuration, or the default configuration is through rsync, and sync them up with your server. The nice thing about Octopress too is that it integrates with GitHub Pages. So if you're looking for a web host provider and would like to try out something free, maybe you want to test Octopress to see if it is the solution for you, you can create a GitHub account or associate it with a repository that you have on GitHub and use Octopress to publish your website to the GitHub repository. There is a setup script that will walk you through the process of doing this. And there are two commands that you need to know. One is rake set underscore root underscore dir, which will set your root directory for your website. Now, of course, normally it is the root directory that is the root of your website, but in order to deploy it as a GitHub project page, you need to set a new root directory that's not the root of your website. Then the next step would be to type in rake space setup underscore GitHub underscore pages, which will walk you through the process of setting up your GitHub page and then deploy it automatically and for free. Those are the basics of using Octopress, and I know there's a lot more detail which you can find out in the documentation. Hopefully you understand why it's been important to me to use a static site generator to generate my blog. And really, the workflow is so simple that once you try this, you'll never want to use anything else, really. All right, so that's it for me. If you have any feedback, please feel free to contact me. I can be reached on Google Plus with the username Tony Pelaez, that's TonyPelaez, or by email at tony@pelaez.me.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Economicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.